Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you very much to the organizers for the invitation to participate in this panel. Since I have a very brief time, I will be short on formalities, but it's an honor for me to be here. I was invited to talk about the preventive aspects of justice systems, and I believe that I was invited for three different reasons. One, because with SARA, I had the pleasure and the honor to be part of the Task Force for Justice, which in its report talks about two points that I think are relevant to this discussion. First, the so-called global justice gap, an effort to quantify the deficit that the world is facing regarding justice issues, where the numbers, as methodologically incipient as they are nevertheless staggering. The report talks about 4.5 billion people excluded from the opportunities the law provides, 1.5 billion people who cannot resolve their justice issues, and at least 255 million people who live in extreme conditions of injustice, having absolutely no recourse to legal systems, either because of living in conditions of slavery functionally, or being totally stateless and having no recourse to justice systems. The second point that report makes, which I think is relevant to this discussion, is that even when there is access to justice, the trajectory that people have to travel in order to resolve their problems through formal legal systems is often torturous, costly. So even access doesn't guarantee satisfactory outcomes. And by that, of course, the report did not mean favorable decisions, but just outcomes that are widely considered to be fair, to make a difference to the lives of people who manage to access the justice system. And I think that it's important to bear these two points in mind. The world is not doing particularly well, either numerically, quantitatively, in terms of access, but even access alone doesn't resolve and does not guarantee satisfactory outcomes. And therefore, the report talks about more people-centered justice, something that it will be important for the world to pay attention to as it tries to satisfy SDG 16 in particular. The second reason why I think that I was invited had to do with my work on transitional justice. And there, I will only point out the very robust correlation that there is between unredressed human rights violations and a conflict. So there's ample literature suggesting, of course, that there is something akin to cycles of violence, that injustices accumulate, and that if the world wants to prevent the recurrence of violence, it is very important to pay attention to redressing human rights violations. And the third reason, and I think that I will concentrate in the few minutes that I have left on this point, is a work that I did while I was a special rapporteur on the notion of guarantees of non-recurrence. Because this is, of course, the preventive angle of transitional justice. And I think that what I wanted to do in the reports on this topic that I presented both to the Council and to the General Assembly had the following characteristics. First, that they focused on nationally led interventions. I think that there is a tendency in international fora to think about prevention in terms of the role of the international community, which I think is important, but it awakens reservations on some member states. But more importantly, the bulk of preventive work is not done by the international community. The bulk of preventive work is done in an ongoing basis at the national level through nationally led programs. The second strategic interest behind my work on prevention had to do with taking seriously for once the idea of broadening and upstreaming prevention work, taking it outside the domain of crisis prevention, not because crisis prevention is unimportant, but because if we want to avoid a conflict and human rights violations, we have to start doing preventive work long before there is a real risk of crisis. The third characteristic of the work has to do with the fact that I am trying to think about a systematic approach to prevention, in contrast to the sort of scattershot approach that is common both at the level of multilaterals and of international cooperation agencies. I think that I'm talking about a systematic framework in at least two senses. One, going back to the old sociological argument that sustainable social change is not simply a question of clever institutional engineering, but that it also requires changes at the level of culture, of personal dispositions, of economic opportunities, and of societal relations in general. And therefore, what we need for a framework is not simply a random list of initiatives for prevention, but rather the clarification of how different initiatives relate to one another. And finally, of course, one of the very important elements of a preventive framework is work on the justice system. I think that it is important to think of rights not simply as exposed redress mechanisms, but also as ex-ante preventive problem-solving anti-grievance mechanisms. The fact is that there are all sorts of simple measures that can be adopted to embody this understanding of rights. Sarah mentioned some in terms of legal empowerment. There are more complex ones, including, for example, the articulation of bills of rights, the establishment of constitutional courts to adjudicate those questions of basic rights, and also measures to protect the independence of courts and other guarantor institutions, which are under threat all over the world from very, very ambitious and grabbing executives, and unfortunately suffering the weaknesses of legislative bodies. I will stop here because my time is over. Thank you very much for the invitation.